You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I was crossing the street when I met the love of my life. I chased after her. Nothing would stand in my way. Not the dog walker, nor the hot dog vendor. Finally reaching her, I asked, "What do you call that amazing smell?"
It's Gain Flings.
Gain Flings. My love had a name, but more importantly, it had a scent.
Fall in love with Gain Flings. Seriously good scent.
Try Gain Flings today with special savings at Family Dollar.
I've never seen the inside of my ears, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, nice.
Knew it. As soon as I saw that joke, I was like, that's textbook Barreto and textbook Medlands. But obviously, as we've discussed before, I'm all about LB.
I loved it. Like, I absolutely loved it. Also, I like it when you like praise it with something. So you either tell me it's going to be good or you tell me it's going to be bad. And the way you were smiling and nodding and talking about this one.
I knew it.
You've almost gone a little bit red, Nate, in the excitement of telling this job.
I'm going to be honest, that's a mix of the joke and the run I did about an hour ago, and the beer I've just started drinking. But
Or maybe it's the glow of the sunset, since we're sat in Rimini Restaurant on Zandvoort Beach, which...
I keep forgetting where we are. Is it Rimini or is it Zandvoort?
Well, I mean, I've never been to Rimini, so I couldn't tell you either way.
Yeah, I haven't either, actually.
But the techno tunes tell me it's probably Zandvoort and the orange...
Yeah, there's a lot of indicators that we're in the Netherlands, and it's so flat as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
I
mean,
I don't think there's a bit of a mound of earth over there. But that's about
they're all the dunes, the sand dunes.
Nate's pointing at something that's probably about 4 feet high, and it's just a bush.
In the Netherlands,
pointing at a bush.
In the Netherlands, they call that like Everest over here. That's like, yeah, they have people climbing that. You know, they have expeditions going out. You know, plant a flag on it.
And Nate's just offended all Dutch people.
No,
anyway,
they know they live on a flat land. They're very proud of it.
I don't know where to go from that. So I'm going to move back to the joke score, and let's just cut it there. Okay, yeah. The joke. Nate's was a good one. So good, I'm going to give you a 9.1.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'm into the nines.
Yeah, it wasn't 10 quality.
No, that's fine. But, you know.
But I think anything, frankly, above an 8 is a good joke.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree. Yeah.
But do you think it would have been higher than 9.1 if you hadn't just offended all of the Netherlands?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Oh, so offending a whole nation, how much roughly does that lose you? Just for future reference.
I haven't worked out.
I tend to do that quite a lot, you see. So
my brain goes into quite detailed coding in the ranking system, so I can't unpick it all to
tell you. It's like he sees the Matrix.
Yeah. Offended nation, tick. So it's -5. I reckon it's -2.
Yeah, I think 0.2. It can't be too much.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry to the Netherlands and the Dutch. But no, I'll take it. 9.1 is good.
Well, as you've probably guessed, we're in Zandvoort, and that means welcome to another edition of the Pad to Hop. And I'm delighted to say, as ever, I'm joined by my very good friends, Nate Saunders and Chris Medland, who are smiling at me like Cheshire cats, which potentially suggests they've had a great day, potentially suggests they're enjoying their beers, or potentially suggest they're looking forward to their food and dining with me, of course.
I think it's a mixture of all those things, actually.
Added to by the two tractors that just rumbled by on the road behind you, which I'm pretty sure you had to shout over. So that's why I found it funny.
I was also enjoying that because I was like, is he going to keep talking? And he did. And the pro amongst us that he is.
But we can help but grin. Also, one of them was towing a massive trailer that was like, you know, a boxed up kind of unit. And it just said the word floor on it in huge letters. Wow. And I don't think it was a floor.
No.
That's the irony.
But floor's quite a popular name here.
Is it?
It's a girl's name. There's girls called Floor. And I'm always, you know, it's a very F1 themed name. We need a lot more floors in F1.
Now this is Dutch knowledge I did not expect.
This is me clawing back that point two that I lost earlier with genuine and sincere chat.
Like point two,
if there's any Floors listening, please tell me if I'm pronouncing it right. Any Dutchies listening? So Dutchies? Dutchies is fine, right?
Yeah.
They love being called Dutchies. If it's Fleur or Fleur or something.
But how do you spell it?
It's like that, floor, like as we put floor, car floor.
Ah.
I'm floored.
So just for clarification, F-L-O-O-R.
Thank you.
Sorry, that was the
Thank
easy...
You for answering that question.
That was the easy way to answer Medlin's very simple question, and I refuse to. I apologise.
If you haven't noticed anybody, it's tough hanging out with Nate.
It really is. I don't know how you guys put up with me, to be honest with you. Med has asked me one thing for this week. He's like, can you bring a certain mic with you? I was like, absolutely, mate. You know me. In safe hands. I didn't bring it. I brought a different mic. I did bring a mic, just not the right one.
Not one I could use.
No. So, but it's quite reassuring because despite all of my obvious flaws, you guys still keep hanging out with me.
Oh, very much so, mate.
Oh, it's entertaining.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, entertaining flaws.
It's true, yeah. Well, that's good. So, floor, we've done the floor bit. The floor chat.
Yeah.
Well, should we move on to the big news of the day? The reason why we're probably in dinner slightly later than anticipated is because Daniel Ricciardo will not be racing this weekend.
Yeah,
chaps, what do you think?
I think he's not racing this weekend.
No, I know. What do you think of the news?
It sucks. It's good news for Liam Lawson. It's been an interesting afternoon running around after this because you start to get like impressions from people in the team that it's actually quite bad what's happened or it's not looking good. And then they had a decision to make. Do they go with Liam Lawson or Nyck de Vries? And by they, Helmut Marko really had a decision to make. And de Vries is still under contract in some way, shape or form with Red Bull. Because, of course, they lost a reserve driver by Daniel getting that seat. So if Lawson wasn't here, they would need someone here. But Lawson was here, so he got the nod. And I spoke to Liam probably about 45 minutes, an hour before it got confirmed. And he didn't know anything at that time. He was so worried that they were going to call Nyck de Vries and put him in instead. He was just going, I think they might call Nyck. I think they might call Nyck. I really hope they don't, but I think they might call Nyck. And A, you could see why. You'd be putting in a more experienced driver, you know, to start with FP3. There's not a lot of time to get ready tomorrow. But B, de Vries also has raced at Monza already, and it looked like Daniel was going to miss Monza with a break of some sort. So it made sense. But Liam really wanted a go. He really wanted to show what he could do. So, I actually felt for him how nervous he was and worried that he wasn't going to get his chance. And he has got it. Which will be interesting to see how he does. It's always good to see a new driver get a chance. But for Daniel, I mean, like, it's such an innocuous crash, but that's why you take your hands off the wheel.
Do you think that's down to... How much of that do you think is down to rust of him not racing? Because he raced for a long time, Daniel. And you know that how quickly they take their hands off the wheel. I'm not trying to, like, say it's his fault, but I'm just really interested if missing a bit of time, you just lose some of those reflexes, don't you? You know, it's obviously only half a year, but I wonder if you just kind of get out of that mindset of... I'm sure they don't, but I wondered that, you know. But it's so unlucky because he could have done that 100 times. I don't think the outcome is the same. And for him, given his story, it's fucking gutting, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Sorry, colourful language there, but you know, I really think it's gutting.
But it is, like, he's what, two races back into it. Like, this was, I know he was hyped because he got the summer break knowing what he was facing, having had those experiences beforehand. So he was so excited to be like, right, I can build on that now. I know where I need to work. And he won't get the chance to show it for probably quite a few weeks. I broke my hand in December.
Same bone, right?
I think so. So I haven't had it confirmed from Ricardo's team yet exactly which metacarpal is broken, but mine was my fifth, so the outside one of your hand. And it was 6 to 8 weeks for the bone to heal. I'm sure he'll be quicker than that because he's an elite athlete, plus he'd have way better treatment than I got. But you lose a load of weakness in it. So I reckon he's going to miss... You know, this is speculation on someone's health, so admittedly... dangerous to do anyway, and also this is without insight, but I think it's probably going to be... I'd be amazed if he's racing in Singapore, put it that way. Definitely miss these next two. If he can't race this weekend, then he almost certainly can't race in Monza, although that would be an easier track to tackle. Yep. But then Singapore will be much tougher. And then it's Suzuka straight after that, also tough. So it could be not until Qatar. Four races missed, painful in that sense. But then he's only got six races to show to Red Bull and AlphaTauri, coming back from injury, what he can do.
I think that's the thing. He'll probably go to sleep tonight really frustrated by it, because I think he was backing himself at this point to comfortably prove that he deserved the seat at AlphaTauri next year, to put him in the position to get back to Red Bull whenever that might be. And now, he not only is he not having the opportunity to do that, but the prime person who might take that seat next year is getting the opportunity in the car now and over whatever races that Daniel won't come back. And Daniel's always going to have that decision at some point of when to come back. He shouldn't rush it, of course, should he? Because that could have a longer term issue. So I feel for him, because I saw him earlier today. He hadn't been any happier. I haven't seen him that happy before.
Yeah. So I couldn't believe it. I saw him walking down the paddock, and he was just, I mean, he's always grinning away, but you just looked at him and he was like, he seems happy. He seemed happy on Thursday. In the press conference, like laughing away.
But I saw him on the back of a scooter that Yuki was driving, going from the... So the paddock split here at Zandvoort, isn't it? And it's the engineering paddock, which is behind the garages where all the engineering trucks are. And then there's the hospitality paddock, which is further down towards the final corner. So most drivers get scooters or bikes or lifts because they don't want to get stopped and have to walk that bit. And he was on the back of the same electric scooter as Yuki, and getting Yuki to drive it. And he was holding on to him and laughing. But they looked a little bit unstable. And it was, like, safe. But I thought it was quite funny that it looked like that. So I jokingly tweeted that I'd just seen this happening. And they didn't look all that stable, so Liam Lawson might want to warm up.
Oh, Medders.
And yeah, people now remind him of it. That was 8 hours or 6 hours before what happened. But genuinely, because he was there laughing away at basically trying to hold on with Yuki driving and how fun it was. But I thought what a great dynamic they had seeing that. Because they seem to get on well. Yuki said some nice stuff about him, but you never know. And they do really seem to have clicked quite well as teammates.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, so we can blame you then, basically. is what you've just admitted there. It's your fault.
Well, we can blame Oscar Piastri, can't we? Because he caused the crash that caused the crash.
Well, yeah. Someone tweets earlier that it's the second time Oscar's derailed Daniel's career. And I know it's a, you know, very, very different ways, but...
And very much a joke, but yeah.
Yeah. And very much not being serious, but, like, you know, it was just ironic that it was Oscar involved, and it's 12 months almost on from when we heard the news from McLaren. Like, it's just horrible time of year for Ricciardo. I think the thing on De Vries I thought was really interesting. I think if they'd done that, to me it would have just been like, it would have been kicking Lawson effectively out to the curb. Like, this is the moment you pick. I know De Vries has that experience, but if you're not going to give Liam Lawson the drive now, it's like, when are you going to give the guy the chance? You know what I mean? Like, I get the De Vries has that contract, but for Marco as well, it would have been such a 180 to have to make. That I just can't see them turning around and be like, yeah, De Vries is in the car. It's just so embarrassing. It was already poorly handled anyway, I think. So to go back to it, you know, I know it would have been nice to see him at his home race. That was the one thing that I think would have been nice for De Vries, to have that moment. But also, it's like when Fiat came back, everyone knew he'd already kind of, you know, had gone, he'd come back. It was just weird. So I'm glad they've gone for Lawson. And I don't know anything about him. I don't know anything about him at all.
I know a bit about Lawson because obviously doing like the F2 presses I used to do, but then just from kind of following some of the junior formula stuff, and he's been doing really well in Super Formula, to be fair, until last time out at MotoGP, where he caused a first lap shunt by, he was trying to take the lead running outside and lost it on the curb. So not the greatest kind of moment to be coming then into this off the back of, but I found it really interesting. Earlier I was chatting to Anthony Davidson from Sky, and went to the, well, basically I abused my power as Jess's future husband, and then I went and like stood next to him when he'd finished at the Skypad, and I was like, oh, have you got footage of Ricardo's crash there? I wanted to like look at how he's holding himself afterwards and things. So we got chatting away about that, and I said, you know, what they're weighing up, and he'd said, it's, you know, surely it's a no-brainer, it's got to be De Vries, because you can't put a rookie in, or he didn't think you should put a rookie in, with just one practice session, who hasn't driven that car yet, who will be trying to prove themselves on a track that's clearly difficult. He says one of the hardest ones to learn and get up to speed on. And that's been proven by the crashes we've had today. So he was really surprised when AlphaTauri then went for Lawson. I think that's going to be one of the things that people are going to have to maybe keep in mind, like anyone who might be listening to this after Sunday, and maybe Lawson's done something brilliant and great, but if not, then it's damn tough to be thrown into the deep end like this and try and get anywhere near the pace.
I wonder if you're a Helmut Marko or a Christian Horner, a bigger thing you're looking at this weekend, you're like, performance is probably going to be pretty bad. a lot of it's going to be how he mentally just copes with the whole thing. And you say, like, he's had that crash coming into it, maybe in not the best headspace, if that is the case. Just how he reacts to it and how he deals with it. That's one thing that they said about Ricciardo, wasn't it, first weekend. He did have a good result in Hungary, but also they were just, like, impressed how he got back into it. Boom, no complications. So that's the case with Lawson. I think you really will check a lot of boxes. But, yeah, you know a lot more about him than me, so I'm pretty curious to see how he gets on.
Well, best of luck to him this weekend. I like you said earlier, Meadows, just use it as a test session, just get through the weekend and see what he can do if he gets another opportunity, which is more than likely that he will. But let's take it back to the man...
Take it back now, y'all.
Yeah. Very good, very good. To the man that everyone is here for, essentially.
Logan Sargeant.
Try again.
He had a solid day, to be fair.
Lance Stroll.
And again.
Antonio Giovinazzi.
Oh, I was going to say fourth time lucky.
Am I warm?
Try the other end of the spectrum.
I'm on the right continent. Other end of the spectrum to Antonio Giovinazzi.
Oh, Le Mans winner.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say Nick Hülkenberg, but that's the same side of the spectrum.
Yeah, it is. So someone who's not won Le Mans.
I think you're talking. Well, at least not in real life.
No.
He's won it virtually.
Has he?
I think so.
Okay. I thought he normally gets disconnected.
Oh, yeah, that was during that, wasn't it? Maybe he hasn't won it. I've got to check that later. I assume you're talking about Max Verstappen.
Yes, Max.
I've heard about the guy. Pretty good. But again, like Liam Lawson, don't know much about him.
I mean, he's been spending so much time up the front and winning races that we haven't really seen him on the world feed because he's gone and smashed it out of the park. And we're watching the race from second down to 20th.
Which can be good.
Oh, it can be great. In fact, it has been great. Can you imagine... If Max wasn't here, we'd have one of the most exciting championships we've had in years.
Yeah, but we wouldn't be here, would we? Sat in Zandvoort with orange all around us.
This is like the Verstappen GP. Like, it might as well be called that.
Well, the trains that we get from Amsterdam out here are called the Max Sprinter.
Yeah, I saw that.
Max Express.
I love that they've gone all in, right, with it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, isn't it? You guys remember the first year we were here, the speed limit was changed to 33 miles per hour?
KPH.
And I remember, I think I've made this joke to you guys before, that I joked to Max that it should be 1 mile an hour when he came back in 2022 because he now has the number one on his car, and he got a bit of a laugh out of that. My grandkids will be hearing that tale. Whether it's true or not, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
He exhaled.
Yes, that makes more sense.
Max didn't throw me out of the room. He didn't order the press team to get me out of there.
So like he's done before.
I'm
that's a whole other episode.
I'm counting that as a win. Just to clarify, that's not happened. Not with Max, anyway.
Who has it happen with?
No one, but I just like to give the readers. Who's the listeners?
Who's the driver you've annoyed the most or upset the most?
The Hülkenberg.
Nico Hülkenberg, wasn't it?
Probably Hülkenberg.
Yeah.
I did. Actually, you guys will quite enjoy this. We'll go back to Max in a sec. I forgot Bruno Firmin's name in a knock-on session yesterday. And for some reason, you guys know I'm a big Bruce Springsteen fan.
He called him Bruce.
I said, so what do you guys think about, you know, Bruce, what Bruce said in Spa? And that's when I went, who? And I was like, Firmin. And he looks at me like, oh. And he didn't seem to notice. I just kind of played it off. But I went redder than this microphone is right now.
Oh,
which is
right.
But yeah, and then I told Lawrence Edmondson this. And he said, no, you've called him Bruce Firmin a couple of times. Apparently I've just had it in my head that his name's Bruce Firmin.
As in copy or on podcast?
Well, I hope not on copy. I hope it's been subbed out copy, if that is the case. I think on our Unlapped podcast, at ESPN 1, I've called him Bruce Firmin.
But no one called you out?
Well, no. I mean, Esteban kind of did. He was like, who are you talking about? And I was like, your boss, Firmin.
You turn around, that guy. Pointed at him.
Anyway, sorry, complete and random.
Sorry, no, yeah, I asked.
Pointless tangent.
No, I liked it. That's what we're here for.
It is, isn't it? Tangents are us, is what we should be called in another world.
Okay, we're not here for that.
But no, going back to Max, it was always really impressive. I mean, impressive about him anyway is he just doesn't seem to really like notice or care about all the adulation and hype. But here, you know how Lewis gets at Silverstone? Like, you can see Lewis is like on a different level a bit. Just mentally, like, you can see how much it means to him. I'm not saying Max doesn't care, but he just doesn't show it in the same way. He kind of just sees it. And there was, I think, Luke Smith from, you know, our friend from The Athletic, asked him, what's it like to be a national hero up here with Johan Cruyff? And he was like, yeah, I just think it's great. There's very, you know, very simple answer. It was a great question, simple answer. It just shows that he just sees it as another weekend to come and win a race. I think that's why he's so good.
He doesn't feel the pressure.
Yeah.
Like that is, so all of these people are here for him, and they all want him to win. And they're shouting his name all day long. They're singing his name. And he's just like, well, that's great. Thanks. Bob's going to crack on with what I'm doing. And he does the same number of media engagements, he says, that here that he does at any other events. He doesn't treat it any differently, like you were saying. I think it's just something when you're an elite athlete, you can kind of maybe tune certain things out, and he's just able to do that. It's not disrespectful. He can just cope with it in a way that he can compartmentalise it and then just crack on with a day job.
Yeah, it's really impressive that he does that, because he's won both races here, hasn't he? He's not looking trouble at any point. I mean, this is Friday, so you know maybe he's in trouble now. Lando was quicker than him in FP2. Huge shock on the cards.
I did some proper analysis on this.
Did you?
And if Max has got all his best mini sectors together, he would have been quicker than Norris.
What about Norris's best mini sectors?
Yeah, I compared them.
Oh, okay. Just look at Norris's lap.
I did Max's mini sectors and Lando's mini sectors, the best for both. And I think whatever the difference was that Lando was ahead, Max was ahead.
Oh, so it's close.
Yeah,
so
It's still very, very close.
You're saying
and Lewis was closer to both of them as well. So Lewis would have moved up to third.
Yeah, Lewis's lap got ruined, didn't it, by the red flag in... Oh, no, it was FP1. Ignore me, everyone. Mix.
You heard it here first. Lando Norris to beat Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen in the Dutch Grand Prix.
But hang on, let's...
And ruin everyone's weekend. Yeah.
Apart from a global sport perspective, a Lando Norris win would be frankly incredible, wouldn't
that
it?
That would be great.
You heard it here first. Fixed Formula One won to Lando Norris win.
Wait for our friend Ben Hunt, who's just released a book on Lando Norris.
He has. Called Lando Norris.
Yeah. It does what it says on the tin.
It's a book, mate. It's not a tin.
Oh, yeah. Fair.
Tin back.
So has Max got this lined up? Is it going to be his ninth successive win?
Yes.
So, yes. And also, this might be controversial, but the more he's won these races, the more I want to see the undefeated season for Red Bull now.
Yeah, I'm starting to get that way.
Because I think that if they just lose one race, if they lose one race and they win all the rest, it's like, okay, it was a great season, but it wasn't. But I feel like we are seeing something really special with Max this year. And we saw special stuff with Lewis, but like this, it just seems that Max, I think Max is on a different level to Lewis at any point. We saw Lewis. Lewis was
that's pretty big.
That's a bold claim.
I mean, Lewis never won 8 in a row, and I think that that's more because Lewis always had either internal pressure or he had a much closer rival in Ferrari or Red Bull or whatever. This year, Max is pretty unchallenged. So it's a combination of stuff. But yeah, the more he wins, I'm just like, this would be great to see. And I'd like to see Perez win a few races. I'm sure as soon as a Lando or a Lewis or a George or whatever won, I'd say it's great. But when you're actually thinking about it, to do something that historic would be pretty amazing. And I'm sure I've pissed off the Dutch earlier, so I've calibrated it out now by pissing off everybody else who doesn't support Max by saying he was better than Lewis.
Yeah. You're back to breaking even, I reckon. So yeah, do you want to go one step above, just to try and get into their good books?
Well, the main thing he's done is piss everybody off that might listen to this.
Yeah, so I'm the unpopular. I'm playing bad cop. You two are definitely good cops.
We're just cops. We don't have to. We can be neutral, and you're just hanging yourself.
Yeah, basically.
Right now.
That just means we all balance each other out pretty well. That's the way I look at it.
Sure.
Do you think Max has got it sewn up, Lawrence?
Yeah, I think Max is going to win it here. I think he'll get 9 in a row. Do I think he's going to win every single race for the rest of the season? No, because I think Checo will probably win one at one point. Do I think they're going to win every other one? Like, surely the laws of probability say no.
Yeah, I still say they're not going to, but. But the fact that we can actually properly start to think it might.
This is the other thing, isn't it? That car probably isn't getting pushed anywhere near the limit.
Yeah, exactly.
In which case, it's not risking reliability.
And so, the year Mercedes should have done it was 2016, and they didn't because of Spain when Lewis and Nico
crashed, didn't they? Yeah.
In the Spanish GP, Max's first win. The other one, I can't remember exactly what happened to Rosberg. He dropped down the order in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And then Lewis had an engine issue. But because of whatever happened to Nico, dropped in behind the Red Bulls, and Ricciardo won. Oh, no, or Verstappen won that race as well, I think.
No, Ricciardo won that. They got Ricciardo one each. That's it.
So if you look at it, they were so close to the perfect season. One was a collision between the two of them, and the other one was just one driver in the wrong position, and then a reliability issue. But they, if you run that season again, they could have gone undefeated. So that shows you it is close. It's tight. you know, it can happen.
The thing is, you probably don't see a moment where Max and Checo are going to collide. So they don't. You don't have that tension, do you,
right,
between
definitely.
The teammates? And then you're relying on reliability if you don't want that perfect run. And I just can't see it. Like, I just can't see it. Even the little niggles they've had early in race weekends so far this year have just been the littlest of things, haven't they?
It's just not a thing like Lewis and Nicola was.
I'm distracted by the argument going on the table behind Lawrence about something. I think it's about pizza either not being good or not cut. Probably not being good. Anyway, back to the Formula One. Sorry about that. I just couldn't help myself but get distracted. I'm easily distracted.
I'm pretty easily distracted.
Yeah.
This might be a good time to wrap.
Yeah. Well, the police have shown up, so there is that. This is, yeah.
Well, this is a good story for
the pad hoc. Yeah, live reporting from a crime scene.
When I said good cop, bad cop, I didn't mean this.
No, but they are here. They've cycled here. They're wearing bicycle helmets. Are we allowed to comment on police work?
I mean, this has kind of accelerated to a point where I thought they were just having dinner. But you know what? I think this seems like a good point to call it quits.
I'm not sure. I think listeners want to know what happens.
Yeah, but it's not a great listening experience.
Yeah,
no, but we could tell them.
We can tell them next week.
I tell you what we'll do. We'll wrap it up in 60 seconds next week with what happened in this race.
Oh, cliffhanger. I love
it. There we go. Chaps, as ever, it's been an absolute pleasure. Looking forward to spending the next couple of days with you guys. Thanks to everyone who's still listening as well. And please do follow us on our social channels at The Paddock. You can read Meadows' work on racer.com, Nate's work on ESPN.com, and my work on F1.com. And we'll do this again very, very soon.
Unless we're arrested.
No, but when there's for clarity, there's no risk of that.
Network.